Welcome back, everybody. This is Wes Young, and you are listening to Quick Words, the bite-sized review show for your bite-sized lifestyle. And today we're going to talk about one of my personal all-time favorite films, Mr. Nobody, starring Jared Leto, very talented, very bizarre young actor. This role was a lot of fun to watch Jared Leto perform because it required a great range of the same character, but in different mini settings. The plot of the film is really what's so intriguing. Now, before we dive in to a lot of the weird intricacies of this film, I want to first explain why this is not a full review if I love this film so much, because I could easily talk about this film for hours on end. I wanted to make a quick words because this is not the type of film that can really just be described. Take one of my other all-time favorite films, Logan. I discussed it many months ago now, and that is the type of film that's very linear in how the story rolls, and you can go from beginning to middle to end, and you can see the character development, the growth, and talk about these top four or five events, and boom, you've got an episode of In My Own Words. Well, Quick Words is more reserved a lot of times for when I see a TV show I like, or maybe there's a film that doesn't have as much to it that's very self-explanatory. Well, Mr. Nobody is certainly not self-explanatory. It definitely takes some explanation or research on your part to fully understand. It's a very mainstream-styled, arty kind of film. And it deals with the grand idea of a multiverse and different decision points and seeing what many of those decision points can lead to. Well, this style of film and the way it's presented is rather confusing. And talking about it, especially when most of the characters in different plot lines are the same name, gets very confusing. Even reading a synopsis on Wikipedia could be very confusing. And also, I would say, because of how visually powerful the film is and how the director of photography and the cinematography and a lot of the editing is very crucial to understanding the message of the film, I would say that you really need to watch it to fully appreciate what all is in the film. So enough of that. Enough of me talking about the production and why you should see it. Let's get into what is the basic plot of this film and why I love it so much. It follows who we first see as a very old man, Nemo Nobody. And you see it opens up in a very heavy sci-fi type setting. In the far future, humanity has been able to create quasi-immortality with, I believe they're referred to as stem cell pigs. Everyone has a pig that has their cells in it, and they're able to get fresh blood and organs from those pigs. And humanity can just carry on continually. Nemo Nobody, however, is the last mortal human in all of history. And it follows the news, sort of a very showy, almost tabloid style following that is filming his last few days on Earth. And he discusses his past. And he reveals in this setting that he remembers pre-birth. He remembers being in this celestial area with children and angels. And before they are sent into the world, before they are to be born, angels touch them and remove their ability to see every decision and where every decision will lead. For whatever reason, an angel skips Nemo, and Nemo enters the world with the ability to see every decision he can make and the outcome of every decision, as well as every decision and every instance that can happen that leads to his decision. So he has this vast knowledge and has to experience life thousands of times simultaneously. Understandably, that kind of style is very confusing to discuss, as you can tell, but the main gist is that there are three major paths that his life can take. The first path, and this decision is brought about because his parents get a divorce, and he is at a train station and must decide who he wants to live with, his mother or his father. And the result is we see several decision points. One is him, of course, willingly choosing his father. One is him willingly choosing his mother. One is him choosing his mother, but because his shoe broke, he has to live with his father. One is a similar instance, and I don't believe it's as crucial, so I'm having a more difficult time remembering. You see a lot of outcomes of a lot of decisions. At certain points, he just decides to see what would happen if he did various things. Various, maybe risky decisions, just to see how they play out. So you see a lot of varying decisions. You see sometimes different cuts of different time points. At certain points, you see him in a space station, somehow ending up there and an asteroid hits it. You'll see him stealing from mobsters and having a hit placed on him. But mainly, the story follows Nemo with his three different options of girls that he will marry. These three girls lead to different lives that he will have and different experiences. One will be where he determines that he will only focus on success and financial prosperity, leading, of course, to him suffering from severe depression, though his life is filled with a complete lack of want and an excess of wealth. But he's empty inside because he feels soulless about it. And there are a lot of symbolic elements to why that decision came to be, sort of, and how he first went out with this girl, and I won't get too much into that. I would highly suggest that you see the film. There's another major line where he marries one girl, and she suffers from severe, either bipolar or manic depressive disorder, and him struggling to hold a job down and his family together while they have two kids and dealing with her severe issues. And then another line would be the main female lead of the movie, which follows his choice to be with Elise. Elise is the main prominent female choice that he makes. And she's, I guess, we're not led to believe that he didn't love the other two wives, because it's very true that he did. But we're led to believe that this is the choice that he found to be the most fulfilling, and we follow his life and how each life decision he makes seems to interact with Elise in one way or another. And there's a major point right at the end, which I'll get to, that I believe she is the penultimate choice that he can make. Well, the choice to be with Elise is, of course, fraught with anything that could stop him. And there are major points in the story. One being that he finally finds her after years, and she writes her number down on a scrap piece of paper, and a storm rolls in. Raindrops ruin the ink, and he can't call her. And he knows that the way global weather works, that a man down in South America boiled an egg for too long that caused the temperature outside of his house to adjust ever so slightly, and then 8 months later, a storm system was generated. It's a very interesting idea, because he goes into how many decisions he made versus how many decisions were almost made for him by factors outside of his control. And at a certain point halfway through the film, you realize that both factors seem to equally be at play with his life. While he is caught in this web of decisions and choices he can make, factors outside of his control are also creating their own webs. And the ultimate moral of the movie, I guess, isn't really that his choice is a big deal and it's very important and you should be stressed out about each choice. The point of the film is that you should live life, because he has this moment, old Nemo, talking to a reporter who snuck in to get the scoop on the last mortal human. And he explains that people long ago in Nemo's time enjoyed life. They loved, they lived, they had music. But people in the future, when they were immortal, when essentially they could make every choice, they had time to make every choice, they stopped really living. They were only concerned with their own existence. And everything is very plastic and veneer, and there's a shallowness to it. And it's intentionally made to look, I believe, very phony, very fake. so a lot of CGI, whereas other points in the film that involve heavy CGI are very acceptable, very passable. And I think that's on purpose to show that there is a lack of genuine humanity in a time where we can know all of our decisions. Mainly just living life and not focusing so much on that is really the point of existence and the point of finding your way in the world. Another major point in the film, I would say, is that sometimes factors out of Nemo's control heavily benefit other people, not just Nemo. It's not an egocentric style film. One major plot that you follow in the film is that after he's rejected by one of those three girls I mentioned earlier at a prom, he hops on his motorcycle and he's speeding down the highway. For factors out of his control, a windstorm blows through and a leaf lands in the road. He skids across the leaf, loses control, and he is comatose for most of his life, hooked up to a respirator, not existing. His parents, through many months and eventually many years, are visiting him, and they eventually start visiting together, and it is heavily hinted that their marriage is able to be reconciled because of this bond they've created. And it teases the idea that he could wake up, but it never really happens on screen. Now, I don't want to give away the grand finale of the movie that shows a lot of tying up of a lot of the storylines the same way, in a very interesting way that will have you amazed but scratching your head. However, the final shot and the opening monologue are the last few things I would like to touch on. The final shot does bookend very well with the movie, but the opening monologue discusses how scientists were testing a pigeon's ability to learn. And the pigeon would touch a button in a cage, and a little door would open, and they would give the pigeon a treat. Well, the pigeon started learning they could touch the button, and a treat would come in, but they also gave it a treat when the pigeon would flap its wings. The pigeon then would flap its wings without touching the button and get a treat. So it would learn that just flapping its wings was all it had to do. The pigeon eventually was given treats without flapping its wings. This resulted in a lot of confusion on the pigeon, and it would start flapping its wings wildly to try and figure out what was going on. It would jump on the button, it would flap its wings, it would bob its head. You see, this is pigeon superstition. And, of course, this whole monologue is given a lot more eloquently by the voice of Jared Leto. But it ends on a very powerful line where the pigeon is left confused, thinking, what did I do to deserve this? And that touches with the theme I mentioned earlier. Sometimes there are reasons for being deserved, and sometimes it's out of your control. Pigeon superstition is where you believe you are the reason for what's happening, whereas that pigeon had no control over when it received a treat. In the final shot, you see child Nemo and child Elise simply skipping stones on a lake. And in the context of when that's shown in a montage and with the film, you're led to believe that ultimately one of the most powerful, most joyous experiences is the childlike idea of not really caring what will happen in the future, not really worrying about other circumstances, and living in the moment, enjoying who you're around, and finding joy in the simplest of things. And sometimes it takes the loss of great things for joy in the simple things to become apparent. But ultimately, that can lead to a lot of peace and a lot of rest from, let's face it, a very anxious lifestyle that I think we've all become a little too acquainted with in the past 12 months. Again, I am Wes Young. This has been In My Own Words, and you've listened to Quick Words, the bite-sized review show for your bite-sized lifestyle. See you around.